And you talk about a convicting thing. The more I study this, the first type is going to absorb most of my time. I don't know if I'll get through all five. But Solomon is going to talk about five people. And here's what he said. He said, I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is a result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. Notice what he said. Now, he's using what we call hyperbole. Do you know what I mean by that? Exaggeration, and it doesn't mean everybody, because certain people do things for a certain their work and so forth. But he's talking about an observation of his of many people, which I'm going to tell you affects many in this class, though I don't know it personally, because I'd have to know you pretty well. But I know that it affects the world. Because as I studied this, I came under great conviction about our country. You realize, don't you, that our nation is idolatrous. You do realize that. You realize that now we have three issues that are primary issues. One, idolatry, which I would identify as materialism. Number two, we have the murder of babies, which is a sin of Israel. Which we do through the abortion, and now we have the gay marriage issue. And so we are a nation that is in bad shape. Now, I said I wasn't going to say much. I'm just going to say this. We told God we didn't want him in the 70s when we threw him out of the schools and out of government and out of our social intercourse. And he said, okay. And he has left us to our own devices. Solomon says that I've seen labor and every skill which is done is a result of rivalry between a man and his neighbor. We call that, in modern terminology, keeping up with the Joneses. Is that a problem in America? Yeah, if you're poor, there's nothing to keep up with for your neighbor. But the word envy itself comes from a feeling of discontent or covetousness with regards to another's advantages, success, or possessions. I'll never forget a lady who was a friend of mine, and her husband came to supper at our house, and her question as she's walking up the driveway is, why has God made you rich and us not? That's a good way to start a conversation. I didn't exactly envision myself as rich at that point, but probably on a comparative basis I was. In fact, my view is that nearly everybody in America is rich because we have so much. Even the poorest among us have so much. And without talking about any specifics, but we are a wealthy nation. We are rich. However, we are not a happy nation. Why are we not happy? Because we need more. It's not enough. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I love this quote by Patrick Morley. Now, Patrick Morley wrote a book called The Man in the Mirror, which made a big impact in my life. It was written in 1989, and he has a website. So I borrowed some stuff from his website for this class where we're going to talk about some of these issues. But I just love this quote. He says, today men are consumed by the desire to buy things they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like. Think about that. Huh? Is that not powerful? Today, men are consumed by the need to buy things they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like. And think about that. A lot of what we do is driven by appearances and driven by what we have to impress others. Remember Solomon's statement. I saw that labor and skill was driven by envy. Right? Now, he says this about the rat race. We can define the rat race as the pursuit of a beautiful, wrinkle-free life. I am guilty. Since I was a kid and I had a Model A Ford with a tin can lid to open the hole, and I had a thing over my manifold, which is a heater, and you open the hole in the floor to let the warm air come in, and I am that old. All right. The car was 30 years old when I bought it. It's a 1931 Ford Model A Coupe, which I wish I had today. It's worth a lot of money. I sold it for $600. I'm an idiot. Huh? Yeah, well, thanks, Ginger. You know, the problem with you being in this class is you know too much history. But I bought in its place a 1957 Chevrolet two-door hardtop with three on the floor. Had a Positrac rear end do 98 and a quarter. So anyway.
Did it have paneling on the side?
No paneling, no. Air Force metallic blue, reverse wheels, Naugahyde leather seats. Every penny I made went to that car. So, no, I don't have that one. It'd be worth a lot today, too. It's a classic. I've owned a lot of classics. Anyway, I confess to being, when I had that car, of just dreaming about having a car with the brakes would stop. You know, power steering and all that was out. But, you know, in a car that didn't rattle. I just dreamed of one day having a car that wouldn't rattle. Today I have a car that has got everything known to man on it, you know. And I am happy. But it took that. I want a wrinkle-free. I don't want any inconveniences of life. You know, God forbid that the garage door opener should break, right? And I'd have to raise it manually. I understand this, and I came under great conviction teaching this lesson. Since there are no winners, the aftermath of running the race and losing takes a heavy toll. Now, the way to beat this is to win. Okay, now, you didn't get that. Listen closely. The double whammy of a media-generated standard of living, anxiety and debt pressure is enormously depressing, particularly for younger people. A lot of you are not so young. Yeah, you're welcome. Not only, that means you're wise. Not only do we have the tension of not reaching the lifestyle as we set our goal, we also have the pressure of the debt, listen closely, we accumulated trying to get there. The debt makes us bitter and angry because we realize we played the part of a fool and deceived ourselves. Not only that, our relationships ended up fractured. The rat race boils down to the conflict between who we are created to be and who we are tempted to be. Could we define the race rat any more succinctly? We have to learn as Christians to be more than what we have or do. All right? What do Americans owe? Listen to this. This is staggering. This comes from the nerdwallet.com. American household consumer debt profile. Credit card debt on homes that actually owe credit cards, $15,706. That's probably at 18 to 25% interest. Average mortgage debt, $156,000. Average student loan debt, $33,000, which I think sounds a little low to me, right? So what does that mean? I understand you have to have debt to buy a house. But $156,000, it says that's a pretty nice house, isn't it? And what does it say to have $15,000 worth of debt? Well, look at these numbers. In America, consumers owe almost $12 trillion in debt. We criticize our federal government for debt. What is it, up to $18, $19 trillion now? As ours, it's up almost 2% from the year before to $12 trillion. $1 billion, or almost $1 trillion in credit card debt. $8.17 trillion in mortgages and $1.19 trillion in student loans. That's why when you have a problem with mortgage interest rates and housing values, there's such a financial crisis. All right. Now, Daniel Bell made this statement, which was amazing. I don't know Daniel Bell. He said he was socially, as a culture, he was a conservative. As a politically, he was liberal and all that. So I don't know. He died I believe in 91, but he made this statement, which I never thought of. He asserted in the cultural contradictions of capitalism. The contradiction of capitalism. Most of us believe in capitalism. The greatest single engine in the destruction of the Protestant ethic was the invention of the installment plan or instant credit. Is that not insightful? What did he mean by that? Huh? Well, the Bible doesn't teach it for sure. But what does instant installment credit or debt, credit cards, what does that mean as far as its impact on the Protestant worth ethic? What, Dave? You can have it now. I've actually heard a commercial that says that, right? Have you ever noticed, even though they have so many defaults and so much problems with credit cards, how they promote them so much? Advertising does work, by the way. But advertising is based on the reality of what? You can have it when? You can have it now. You actually deserve it. You should get it. Instant gratification, huh? All right. 1954. The teacher said you need to get a credit card. Establish your credit. Okay. A Sears credit card. Oh. Do you think Sears had anything to do with this problem? They're kind of suffering today, aren't they? I thought that was a great observation. That our nation has gone, but that we've lost the Protestant work ethic. The Protestant work ethic would say what? We work and we do what? We save. Huh? What? And we buy on cash. Now, at least our church is back to that. That's a wonderful thing. Here's my observation. Instant credit fuels our envy. See, somebody's got something you want. Jim sees a new boat, right? And he can get it how? Credit. Or whatever it is. You see somebody with a new car? In fact, it's gotten to the point, this is not true confessions, but just to let you understand how this problem works. I bought a new Acura in 1999, 2 weeks before the next model came out. The next model had a 6-speed transmission. My model had 5. And how did I feel? Cheated, exactly. It's like my brother was here a while ago. He's rearing a new Fit watch that he can send text on and do stuff, you know? I don't have one. I know how this works, and the reason I'm confessing is I know it affects some of you. Probably just 4 or 5 of you, but, you know, you need to listen to what Solomon has said. Morley says this, the material prosperity we enjoy is a modern miracle. Roger was talking about 1954. Listen to this. In 1950, our homes were 1/3 their present size. My mother and daddy bought a home in 57. It was $9,999 in Oak Forest over here. Right, Lisa? And Forest Oaks or Oak Forest, I never remember what it is. We lived on Forest Oaks. And no one had heard of an invention called a personal computer. That was the 90s. Greyhound was how you traveled. Space exploration was an abstract idea, right? This is before 60. A television was an infant. And a millionaire was a rarity. Our progress would make even Solomon burn with envy. Who would have guessed that in 65 short years since the Great Depression, end of the Great Depression and World War II, America would achieve such a remarkable standard of living, even in the middle of such devastating recession. Yet our prosperity has a dark side. Yes, Randy. All right. Enter a website, enter your gross income.
And when you entered it, it would tell you where on the scale you were globally.
Okay.
And when I entered my teacher salary.
Right. Okay, which I'm sure is astronomical.
I wound up in the top tenth of the top 1%.
The top tenth of 1%. Wow. Well, if I don't get some work, I'm going to be on the bottom 10. I'm going to be broke. Anyway, thank you. The top 10th on a teacher's salary. Here's what he says more. The dominant economic theory, listen, in America, in our lifetime, has been consumerism. Now, we call it by another name, and it just escaped me. What was it? No. The dominant economic theory. I got Keynesian economic theory. Borrow money. Consumerism to buy. But think about what that's really communicating to you. If you want a prosperous country, you need to do what? Spend yourself into total debt. Webster's dictionary defines consumerism as the economic theory that is a progressively greater consumption of goods is beneficial. Is this true? Absolutely. A glance at newspaper ads and TV commercials readily proves that, true or not, the world of commerce diligently applies this theory to their marketing and business plans. And if you don't believe me, you watch this next election before, you know, we're going to throw up in a few months. But what's going on is they keep talking about the major issue is what? The economy's stupid. Why? Because we worship materialism. That's my point. And installment debt has made that possible. And it's never good enough, is it? Kind of like preaching. Now, you may not be able to read this, but this is the main issue. This is from a CBS News poll, April 30th to May 5th, which is pretty relevant and current. What do you think is the most important problem facing this country today? Open-end question. Answer. The economy and jobs, 20%. So where's the mind of America? What's important? Money. All right? And then miscellaneous social issues, et cetera, et cetera. Here's another one. What should Congress be doing? Listen to this. Well, it would be... that would be true, Patty. The best thing Congress could ever do is take a break. Now... here's the question. What do you think is, and I tried to blow this up, but I couldn't. What is the most important issue that Congress should be dealing with next year? Would you say it is jobs, economy, health care, illegal immigration, or foreign threats? Answer? The economy, 29%. Illegal immigration's jumped way up, 14%. If you took jobs in the economy, you'd be at 43%. There's a reason for talking about all this. The reason I'm trying to do is to impact you that what Solomon said is absolutely true and relevant to our lives. Because we have a tendency to buy into this envy thing, this consumerism, this thing about things that we have to have in order to make us happy. And Solomon's conclusion, as we'll see in a minute, is what? This is vanity. When we choose the rat race, fracture lines soon appear in our relationships, and crumbling is not far behind. Unfortunately, all too often in the pursuit of good life, most men leave a trail of broken relationships. Now, you women are not innocent. This is just a website for men, for the man in the mirror. Do you know what the number one cause of divorce is in America? Wow. You know what the number two cause is? No, not sex. In-laws. Anyway.
Live in in-laws.
Well, that would be... my in-laws love me. Yeah. Solomon says, as we just talked about, that this too is vanity and striving after the wind. In other words, here's what we're talking about. What's the message here? Do not look to what? Do not look to money. Do not look to things to do what? To satisfy you. Because if you do and you get them, are you going to be satisfied? No. Because you always, what is it about the human psyche, the human soul, that says we just need more? Is it not true? It's never what? Yeah, I love this quote. Next chapter, my favorite chapter is coming up in 2 weeks. He who loves money will what? Not be satisfied with money. He who loves abundance, which would include everything, with its income. This too is what? Vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. I like that. When good things increase, those who consume. Warren Wiersbe says this, there's no escaping the fact that we need a certain amount of money in order to live in this world, but money of itself is not the magic cure-all for every problem. In fact, an increase in wealth usually creates new problems that we never knew even knew existed. And I can tell you that. Having been a CPA in practice, public practice, for over 46 years, I can tell you that I have had numerous clients who, when they got a lot of money, through some windfall of their business or through good management of their business or through death of somebody who left them a lot, it can actually cause more stress and strain in the family. If you want to see fights in a family, just have somebody die. Right? You've been there, huh? It's horrible, isn't it? Some families actually just almost blow apart because of it. And yet they did nothing to accumulate it. Solomon would say what? This too is vanity. Reality. Richard? And it doesn't take a lot. I actually have a client who inherited a bunch of money from his parents when they died. And he flipped his sister for the final quarter. I'm not exaggerating. He flipped the coin to see who was going to get the last quarter. That's called a division of property. Solomon mentioned one relatives and friends start showing up and enjoying our hospitality. All we can do is watch them eat up our wealth. Or perhaps it's the tax agent who visits us and decides that we owe the government more money. Now, I would tell you, based on personal experience and observation as a CPA and as a certified fraud examiner and crooks, that a lot of money creates lots of problems. It causes a lot of problems in relationships many times. So what happens? Somebody dreams about getting somewhere, and then they get there, and all of a sudden they're worried about losing it. Now, Chuck, where do I do? Where do I invest my money? I don't know, dig a hole in the backyard or whatever. And when you come down to it, the Apostle Paul said, the just shall live by faith. And money is not a cure-all. So what does this mean to all of us? Well, the writer of Hebrews says this, make sure that your character is free from the love of money. Being content with what you have. Contentment is an incredible thing in our society. Why? Because every force you have coming at you on radio and TV and newspapers and magazines is telling you what? You're not content because you don't have this. Can't get no satisfaction. That was a song, wasn't it? For he himself has said, look, be content with what you have because why? You can trust him. I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me? Jesus says this. This is really an important verse for me over the years. Do not worry. I used to be a worrier. Not anymore, I don't think. Saying, what will we eat, or what will you drink, or what will we wear for clothing? For Gentiles eagerly seek all these things. But your Heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. In other words, what's the importance of what Jesus is teaching? Trust Him. Absolutely. Trust Him, and He'll provide your needs for you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Amazing, huh? The first man. The second one is not motivated at all. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Solomon is contrasting. He's got this one guy, all he can do is work, keep up with his Joneses and because of envy. And then he's got another guy that what? Doesn't do anything. In fact, there's a, should have looked it up in the Proverbs. There's one that says, somebody says there's a lion in the street and he can barely raise his hand to get the food to his mouth. The idle man thinks that doing nothing will bring him peace, but his lifestyle only destroys him. The Proverbs say this, he who is slack in his work is the brother to him who destroys. All right. In other words, you got this balance in the Scripture. The balance is don't strive to just have everything and to work and that's it in life because that's vanity. On the other hand, you need to work. And there's a balance. The ultimate balancing factor is trust. Trusting God for the results. Proverbs 6 says, a little sleep, a little... Oh, this is convicting. A little sleep, a little slumber. I think of this every time right before my nap. A little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. Proverbs 19 says, laziness cast into a deep sleep, and an idle man will suffer hunger. Why is that? Because in Solomon's day, if you weren't working, what? You ain't eating. Yes. Proverbs 6:10. Oh, okay. Okay. Wake up quicker. Okay. Proverbs 21, the desire of the sluggard puts him to death. For his hands refuse to work. All day long he is craving, while the righteous gives and does not hold back. Now, isn't that interesting? The poor man who won't work is still guilty of the same thing the one who works like crazy is. Did you see that? You know, there's a proverb that says he's what? The desire puts him to death. All day long, he's what? Craving. Givers and takers. Somebody told me one time there are givers and takers in life. Hope you're a giver. Yes, Peggy. Absolutely right. Bill Bright, according to Peggy, Bill Bright says, to be out of debt frees you to give and do ministry. And that's exactly right. And by the way, that's what God expects of us. To put aside on a weekly basis money that we can give when the need arises. Important thing for a Christian is to be a giver, not a taker. Say that again now. That's pretty good, Roger. He who takes but never gives may last for years but never lives. That's wonderful. I like that. I like that. What did you say, Tracy? Speak up. The more you give, the more you're going to have. I believe that is true. Somebody, Carol, you had something. Right, you can make an increased payment on your home, right? Well, there's credit debt, yeah, because there's no value there. Right. Okay, thank you. Paying for a car never brings it. Yeah, because they don't. They depreciate. Assumptions of this. Everybody wants to be employed. That's an assumption we have in our society, isn't it? Is that a valid assumption? Is this true? Let me confess to you. I spent a good amount of time yesterday searching the internet. You know, the internet knows everything. And it's also 100% reliable. Especially since Al Gore invented it. And I tried to find out the reasons why the hardcore unemployed, what their feelings were, what their sense of was. I couldn't find any articles. You know what it all talked about? We need a better economy. We need full employment. We need to provide job training. You need to shave before you go to a job. Don't get any tattoos. You know, all this kind of stuff, but nothing dealt with this issue of somebody who literally says, I don't want to work. Huh? Oh, people on TV have interviewed and said they didn't want to? Okay. Doug. Wow. That's really, yay. Tammy.
You didn't find the lady that thinks that we need to pay for her wedding in a castle because it's her God-given right to get married in a castle?
Really? Tammy says, no, I did not find that article. What do you mean I need to search a little harder? I got to tell you, Tammy, you got too much time on your hands if you found. I love Tammy. Anyway, she's back. Oh, I forgot Facebook. Oh. I hear about Facebook all the time, Tammy. But Leslie won't give me her password. Anyway. Solomon says, actually, there are some who prefer a lack of profitable activity. Here's Paul's solution. So that you would follow our example, for even when we were with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, now I think it's important to be fair to those who are unemployed, that says who are not willing to work. We're dealing with those deadbeats, leeches on society, who refuse to work even though he could. It's like the guy who's offered a job, but he's holding out for a management position. Then he's not to eat either. Well, he'd solve a problem pretty quickly. By the way, without being political, when the Republicans and Bill Clinton, I guess that covers both parties, doesn't it? So it's not really political. When they passed reform back in the 90s, where they said you had to work to get the welfare, it revolutionized the welfare system. And then we came right back and did away with it because we want people enslaved to the government. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. It makes them slaves, but slaves like to eat. For we hear that some among you are leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies. In other words, they're just wasting time. All right? Patty, you're getting real personal now. Yeah, it could have caused a family problem here, so... I think you've been on it a few times, haven't you? Oh, yeah, you're not talking. Wow. Well, you're just out of touch then. Now, such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to work in quiet fashion and eat their own bread. So here we got the man who's working for envy. And we got the man who's not working at all, but he's envying. The solutions, be content with who, what you have, trust God for what you have, learn to say it is enough, learn to look at what you have and say literally to God, it is enough, I trust you. That's the first lesson. Second lesson, if you're refusing to work, if you're not motivated at all, then you need to begin to trust God and go to work. Because that's God's institution. Now here's the third guy. One who is in balance. Now there's a little debate to this particular one. I'm going to give you my spin on it based on my research. It says one hand full of rest is better than two fists full of labor and striving after the wind. All right? So what is Solomon saying? Huh? No quick, rich quick, but what is he talking about? I'm saying this is a person who's in balance. Doug? All right, there's a time for everything. All right, do not let, he's saying that basically you don't have to be a total workaholic driven by everything, envy and all those things, be content with less. One handful with tranquility is better than two handfuls. And I don't know if any of you have ever been a workaholic. I have. And it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible cycle because you never have time for anything. Your family, your children, anything. It's all consumed with work. And when you get through, it's what? Vanity. It's all vanity. That's the lesson. Randy? Work to live, don't live to work. Exactly. They stepped and sell the word prologue. Yeah. The solution to the debt? You want the answer? Stop. You used to have a preacher that would say, you have a problem with sin? Don't. Oh, grace is a huge problem, yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. I think that's true. They are actually taking money out of their savings to pay the debts of Greece. Right. Could happen here. There's been rumors for years they were going to take our retirement plans and take the money, that's several $1 trillion, and then give us some kind of guarantee. I trust them. Gary? Larry Burkett wrote about it. Oh, okay. There's several trillions in Simon. Right. It's sort of like be Social Security, which is not really a fund. It's just IOUs, right? All right. 1 Timothy 6 says this. The Apostle Paul says, but godliness is actually a means of great gain when what? Accompanied by contentment. I want you content. For we have brought nothing into the world. And he says you're not going to have a U-Haul attached to your hearse. So we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering with these, we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. How true is that related to our country? That we have literally spent ourselves almost into oblivion. You don't even know how much $19 trillion is. I mean, you don't have a clue how much that is. And for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it, that's believers, by the way, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. A Christian can have this problem. Now, he also said, do this, but flee from these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you were called, and you may... the good confession in presence of many witnesses. Number four guy, and I'm running out of time. The one who wants it all for himself. All right? Then I looked again at vanity under the sun. There was a certain man without a dependent, having neither son nor brother, yet there was no end to all his labor. Indeed, his eyes were not satisfied with the riches, and he never asked, and for whom am I laboring and depriving myself of pleasure? This too is vanity and is a grievous task. Workaholic. Doesn't even have anybody to leave it to. Doesn't have anybody to share it with. No family. He's just working, working, working. He never stops to ask himself what? Why? Why am I doing this? It's nuts. Solomon says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there's not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm, but how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart. It's hard to figure out why it's the context here. Well, the context is this guy who's alone, who's doing it all for himself, and Solomon says it's better to have what? Partner or someone to share with. Now, we'll throw in a quick deal for you. If you're thinking of getting in a partnership, never get into a 50-50 partnership. 51-49 is good. Somebody's got to be in control. That comes from a CPA when you see partnerships break up and there's only 50-50. Advantages: good return for labor. It's called synergy, kind of a 1990s type word. Insurance against disaster. Provides comfort in adverse circumstances. I think it can apply this to marriage. And protection against wrongdoers. And finally, there is safety in numbers. And then the last guy, and I'll finish up. One who fails to know that fame and power are fleeting. All right? It's Ecclesiastes 4. The poor yet wise lad is better than an old and foolish king who no longer knows how to receive instruction. Kind of happens when you get old. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. For he's come out of prison. I can tell you understand that. For he's come out of prison to become king, even though he was poor in his kingdom. We're thinking this is a young lad. I have seen all the living under the sun thronged to the side of the second lad who replaces him. There is no end to all the people, to all who were before them. Even the ones who come later will not be happy with him, for this too is vanity and striving after the wind. I will use a relevant political example. Our president, the world was excited to have him. He was going to change everything for the better. And got the Nobel Peace Prize, and people flocked to him. I still do. However, people are not happy with you forever. Did you know that? And what the lesson here is, the truth, is that an humble, poor, young, and wise king is better than an old, foolish king who will not listen to wise counsel. Wisdom is better than age. Secondly, at first, the young king is well received and become rich. Third, the next generation will not appreciate this new king and will replace him. So once you get there and you work to get this fame and fortune and popularity, what happens? They're tired of you. I always wondered in the Old Testament how these kings rule for 40 and 50 years. Have you ever thought about that? Whoa, what a burden. All right? Lesson: fame and power are fleeting. Five guys. One works out of envy. One doesn't work at all. One's balanced. One's a workaholic. And one doesn't realize that fame and power and fortune are fleeting. What does Solomon say? This is all vanity. What does he recommend we do? Be content. Learn to say that what you have is enough. If you leave this class today and you come to a realization that what you have is from the grace of God, and that you are so blessed, the lesson was worthwhile. See you in 2 weeks. Oh, they didn't say that at the first? Janet Valentine, does everybody know she passed away? Her funeral is Tuesday at the church at noon. Visitation Monday at 9:00 a.m. on Beamer. Thank you. I thought they'd cover that, Marina. I would have.